Welcome to the Nacha Healing Show. Keep it Nacha with the Nacha Healing Show.
You are listening to the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Catherine Kerrigan, medical intuitive healer, Amazon number one best-selling author. You can find out more about me and my work at CatherineKerrigan.com and UnlimitedEnergyNow.com. While you're there, sign up for my newsletter, which is now available on Substack. Now, our guest today is a multifaceted author. Nathaniel Altman is the author of many, many books about diet, about healing, about metaphysics, and relationships. You can find out more about Nathaniel Altman and his wonderful books at nathanielaltman.com. And we're here today to talk to him about his latest book, The Genealogy of Plant Foods. Welcome, Nathaniel Altman.
Hi, thank you, Catherine. Nice to see you.
So Nathaniel Altman, most of us, when we think about genealogy, we think about family history, where my mother came from, where my father came from, all our ancestors. How did you get interested in writing about the genealogy of plant foods?
Well, I've always been interested in genealogy, and I did a lot of research into my own family history and found out a lot of interesting things that I didn't know before. And I learned to appreciate my ancestors much more. And I'm very grateful to them for what they've done to kind of set myself up in a sense. And I found out that with foods, it's a very similar path that many of our foods, in fact, all of our foods have very long histories, very complex and often fascinating stories about how they came to the United States. And also I wanted to include how they are used as food and how their nutritional value and their medicinal value as well. So I was able to put them all together in one book.
Fascinating. Now, which is the oldest human plant food?
Well, there are a few that are very, very old. For example, oats go back about 32,000 years to Southern Europe and Northern Africa. Barley goes back 17,000 years to Egypt. Rice from 6,500 BC to China. Chestnuts, 3,700 BC. And also fossilized remains of ancestors of walnuts actually go back millions of years to both North America and to China. And it's one of the most ancient foods that humans have been eating and very important part of Chinese culture.
So I first learned about food families, and that's actually what it's called food families, when I was studying food sensitivities. So light years ago, many, many years ago, when I was first working on becoming healthier and improving my diet, I had a lot of food allergies and food sensitivities. And so if you're sensitive to a food and one food family, they're more than likely going to have sensitivities to foods in the entire family group. And so I remember organizing my kitchen at the time. I was very, very sick, so I had to be unfortunately pretty strict. I organized my kitchen into food families. So, but your book, The Genealogy of Plant Foods, talks about these families. So, and the foods that you mentioned, these oldest human plant foods, what I notice about them as you discuss this is that they really agree with most human beings. Like, you won't find many humans that are allergic to walnuts or allergic to rice. What is your observation about that?
Well, I think the foods that have really been very popular throughout history, people are not terribly allergic to, but there's some foods, for example, peanuts, which originated in Peru thousands of years ago and were cultivated by the Incas, people have allergies to them. And for some reason or other, and I'm not really sure about why, A lot more people have food allergies than ever before. And there are probably a lot of other reasons for that, such as pesticide residues and plastics and food processing and so on. But a lot of foods, I think the majority of foods people are not allergic to, which is probably a good thing.
Fortunate. Now, as you studied the genealogy of plant foods, Nathaniel Altman, which food su story surprised you the most?
Well, I found all the stories fascinating, but tomatoes was one that was particularly interesting to me because it's one of my favorite foods. And it's actually not a vegetable, although we eat it as a vegetable, it's technically a fruit. And a number of the foods that we call fruits are actually vegetables and vice versa. But originally came from the west coast of South America, particularly Chile, Peru, and Ecuador. And they were very tiny originally, and they were eaten by birds who migrated north. And the seeds that they ate were not digested. So when the birds would be flying, they would defecate the seeds, and that would start growing into tomato plants. They finally made it to Mexico, and the Mexicans were the first people to cultivate tomatoes. And now they're about 8,000. This is about 8,000 years ago. And it's really quite interesting. And there's also a lot of resistance in the West to eating tomatoes because they're a member of the nightshade family, the deadly nightshade. And they finally became popular in Italy in the 1500s, in the United States, only in the mid 1800s. Today, there are about 10,000 varieties, and it's a very popular food. So that was one of the most fascinating. Chili peppers has a similar history because it's the same thing. The seeds were spread by birds. They wound up in Mexico, and then they were cultivated there. And chili peppers have gone all over the world and are super important in Indian and Thai and Chinese cuisine, as well as Mexican and Tex-Mex food. So the stories are all very interesting for every plant food that I've studied.
Now, Nathaniel Altman, you mentioned nightshades. Can you explain for our audience what exactly are nightshades and why are some people sensitive to them?
Well, I don't know how sensitive they are to them, but there is one, the families could contain hundreds of different kinds of plants. And some of them are edible and some of them are not. So like deadly nightshade is a poison. And it's sort of like if you're a member of that family, people kind of look at you kind of strangely. If I had a family that had a famous criminal, they said, "Oh, you're related to this criminal." It doesn't look good for me. So there's would be a lot of prejudice in using it. So
So
it's
nightshades
mainly
would include eggplant, peppers, tomatoes.
exactly. And these were resisted for many, many years. Tomatoes, became popular in Italy, I think, in the 1700s, and not before that. So there was a lot of resistance to that food. Also, very similar with mushrooms because they were very popular in Asia, but in the West, they were considered witches, connected to witches and black magic because they're not vegetables and they're not meat. What are they? They're fungi. So people really didn't trust them. And of course, some of them are poisonous. So there was a lot of resistance to it. And one of the kings of France, I believe it was Louis the 15th, decided to try them and he loved them so much, started to cultivate them and serve them to his guests. And they became accepted in France and then throughout Europe, finally into the United States. So all of these, the families do have something to do with their acceptance.
Now, will you explain for our audience what exactly are phytochemicals?
Well, phytochemicals are basically chemicals that are found in plants. And in the last maybe 20 or 30 years, scientists have been researching and discovering many of the chemicals that are in plants. A lot of the research is actually being done outside the United States, which is kind of interesting. And these just include so many different kinds. You've got what are called flavonoids and alkaloids and phenols, carotenoids, phytosterols, antioxidants. There's so many. And all plants contain them, and they're finding that hundreds of them actually help in the prevention and cure of disease. And they're particularly found, in plant foods. And they're discovering that, when they say food is your best medicine, this may be really the case. And they're actually developing medications based on plant phytochemicals.
So years ago, I had the great privilege of studying food healing with a Qigong master named Jeff Primack, who's the author of many wonderful books about healing with food. And he talked at great length about phytochemicals, and there's all different kinds of ones. For example, anthocyanins are water-soluble antioxidants that are found in purple fruits and vegetables. And so the reason we want to eat a wide variety of fruits and vegetables is for these varieties of phytochemicals. So it's not just antioxidants and fiber that we get out of eating fruits and vegetables. There is a wide variety of healing properties in these phytochemicals. Now, Nathaniel Altman, which three foods have been found to prevent cancer?
Well, the most outstanding one are the cruciferous vegetables, which include broccoli, cabbage, kale, cauliflower, bok choy, and also green leafy vegetables. Those are like the treasure. And they not only are good for cancer, but they've also been found to help people with depression. I know you've written a book on that, and it's very important. Again, they may help with that. Also, pulses like beans, lentils, soybeans, and soy products have also been documented to be anti-cancer. Also, many kinds of mushrooms like shiitake, maitake, and even the little white button mushrooms that are commonly found in the supermarket are also have anti-cancer properties. And also green tea, which has been studied extensively in the past few years. So if we could include more of these foods in our diet, we'll have a better chance of hopefully preventing cancer.
Now, which foods help us to prevent Alzheimer's disease?
Well, there have been several studies that have been done recently, and most of them have to do with nuts. And these would be almonds, cashews, hazelnuts, pistachios, and especially walnuts. And the Chinese, in their mythology, say that because the walnut, if you open a walnut, it looks like a brain inside. It's considered brain food for them. So they always talk about eating walnuts as often as you can. Probably about four a day would be sufficient. The problem with nuts is they're high in calories. They'll make us fat and they're very delicious. So it's kind of hard to stop eating them when you start. But, something like eating four walnuts a day would probably be a very good thing to do. I've been eating a lot more nuts since I've discovered their healing properties.
Which brings me to my next question, because a lot of times when we study something or write books about it, that changes our own behavior. How did writing The Genealogy of Plant Foods change the way that you eat?
Well, I've been a vegetarian and primarily a vegan for since 1969. But I've been finding eating more of the foods that I think are healthiest, and that certainly would include foods that I've always enjoyed, like broccoli, cauliflower, green leafy vegetables. I've expanded to enjoy bok choy a lot more. That's one of the healthiest things you could eat. And also, I've been using more spices because spices are also filled with phytochemicals. And for example, the kind of spices like basil, very, very important, thyme, oregano, things that we normally enjoy, but I've been using them more often. Also, chili peppers to flavor food. I've been spicing my food up a lot more. And I also think that spices in mixture have a combination of phytochemicals such as Italian seasoning, herbe de Provence, garam masala. The mixture of spices together in a spice mix are very, very good for health. And I think we should use less salt, more spices. Black pepper, for example, is one of the best to eat. And if you combine it with turmeric, which is a lovely green, lovely yellow orange spice from India, if you mix them together, they become much more powerful. Anti-cancer, good for your heart, good for controlling blood pressure, and so on. So it's changed my eating to be more varied and more interesting.
Great information. I know for myself that when I really focus on getting enough of the really good foods in my diet, I just have less desire to eat junk.
Yeah, that's true. I agree with you. Definitely right.
Yeah, because when you really feed your body, then you're satisfied. You're not hungry. You're giving your cells exactly what they need.
And I think what people need to understand is, even, if your diet is only vegan and only plant foods, by using the foods in a creative way, especially, using good cookbooks, using some of the wonderful ethnic recipes that are all over the world that people enjoy, you will have food that's more tasty, more, the food will be more of a positive experience than just filling your belly and getting nutrition. But you really enjoy the food. It doesn't take a lot more work, I found out. So it's really very easy to use these foods. Many of them are quite versatile.
And with that, let's take a break and listen to a message from one of our commercial sponsors here at UK Health Radio. My name is Catherine Kerrigan, medical intuitive healer, Amazon number one best-selling author. We're listening to Nathaniel Altman, the author of The Genealogy of Plant Foods. We'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nathaniel Altman, what three foods are best for reducing blood pressure? So many people have high blood pressure.
Well, foods like barley and buckwheat and oats have been found to reduce blood pressure. And also green leafy vegetables. We talked about them earlier about cancer. A lot of these foods have multiple health benefits, not just one. But lettuce, broccoli, cauliflower, kale, bok choy, collard greens. All of these foods are very good. And even things like, a lot of people, for example, when they buy fresh carrots, they throw out the greens, or they have radishes and they throw out the greens. Those can be washed, those can be cooked, those can be used in salad. And really, we should utilize as much of these wonderful green vegetables as we can. I think Americans don't eat anywhere near as much as we should. Fortunately, I enjoy them and they're very easy to cook with.
Another food that is known to lower blood pressure is actually celery.
Oh,
And
yes, celery's great.
yeah, and whether you juice celery or eat celery, either way, it will lower your blood pressure. Now, you have done this book, The Genealogy of Plant Foods. Where did most of our plant foods originate? The plant foods that we eat today in Western society?
Well, a lot of foods came from China. For example, all of our citrus fruits originally came from China thousands of years ago. A lot of also foods came from Mexico, such as corn and beans. Avocados, of course, are from Mexico, tomatoes, peppers. So those are two very important regions. And also the Middle East was a source. I think they called it the Fertile Crescent, which is, includes Israel and Lebanon and Egypt, and foods like broccoli, beets, carrots. A lot of them came from that region, and they kind of migrated into the United States through when people migrated here, they brought food with them, and also food was brought from, for example, from Mexico into the United States as well. For example, avocados were introduced to California in the early 1900s. It was actually grown by a group of theosophists in San Diego. And they had a utopian community there, and they grew about 100 different types of avocados at one point. So the food came here through many different paths. Very interesting for each one.
Which foods can stimulate our sex drive?
Oh, well, the ones that are the most popular are garlic, onions, leeks, and especially chives. And these have been pretty well documented in, well, scientifically, they've been found to be helpful. But in China, they're considered aphrodisiacs, and the Buddhist monks are not allowed to eat any of these foods. And in traditional Buddhist vegetarian cuisine, these foods are not even allowed because they'll stimulate sexual interest. I really don't know how true it is. These foods are all delicious and I like them, but I can't vouch for their effectiveness.
Now, eating beans, what can eating beans do for us? And I assume you're talking about lentils.
Right, lentils are not technically not beans. They're called pulses, but beans like black beans, red beans, great northern beans, are very high in protein, vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants, which help prevent cell damage. They're high in dietary fiber, important for elimination. They help reduce cholesterol, manage blood sugar, support healthy gut bacteria. A recent study, it was actually was a TV show that was on, I believe, public TV. They found that eating a cup of beans a day can extend one's life by an average of 4 years. They were studying the longest living people in the world, and they all seem to use beans as one of their basic foods. And also, these foods are inexpensive, very versatile. They could be used in salads, dips, soups, casseroles, main dishes, and the price is very low. These would also include lentils and garbanzo beans, which I happen to really like in the form of hummus. These would be like a garbanzo bean paste. But these foods are very, very good for you.
So, Nathaniel Altman, somebody listening to you might think, okay, well, how can I include more of these healthy foods in my diet? If somebody's listening and they're wanting to improve their diet, what advice would you give them? Where do you think people should start in improving their diet?
Well, I would start with foods that maybe we know something about and that we enjoy, and use them a little bit more. And also, I think it's important to be open to new foods that we originally didn't understand. When I first stopped eating meat, I was about 20 years old. My mother was completely hysterical and didn't know what to feed me with. But my aunt, who happened to be a gourmet chef, started recommending different foods to me, like hummus, garbanzos, different kinds of Middle Eastern food, more Chinese foods, Italian foods, and expanded my interests gradually. And I think people should just be curious, find out what cooking shows, watch them online or on TV, and then gradually expand. A lot of these foods are inexpensive, and very easy to prepare. So I think it should be a gradual process. We'll make sure that you get a balanced diet with very many different kinds of foods, whole grains, vegetables and fruits, and legumes, beans, lentils, all of these. See how you could work with them. And I think that would be a good path to take.
So, if I'm working with somebody who's just starting to improve their diet, here's a couple of recommendations. The first thing I would recommend is to come up with a list of four vegetables that you like and would actually eat. So,
Very
for
good.
example, let's say I've heard of kohlrabi, but I have no idea what it is or how to cook it, but I might eat broccoli, or I might eat green beans, or I might eat cauliflower. Or I might eat asparagus. So I say come up a list of four vegetables. And the reason I say four is that you rotate your foods, right? So maybe 4 days a week you eat at home, and maybe one day a week you eat out with your family or your friends. But pick four vegetables that you would actually eat, and then pick four proteins that you would actually eat. Now, I happen to be a meat eater, so I would combine the meat and the vegetable along with a healthy fat. So, what's a healthy fat? Coconut oil, butter, ghee, olive oil at room temperature, so that you would mix those with the vegetables. And another place to start, and this is an interesting one, this is actually my second radio show that I've run, the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio. Before this, I ran another radio show for about 3.5 years. And when I was on that show, I interviewed a gentleman named George Metallion, rhymes with Italian. And he had founded an organic foods company. And then he wrote a very interesting book called The World's Healthiest Foods. So we actually studied the nutritional value of food. And for example, people will argue, what's the healthiest fruit? Well, the healthiest fruit is actually strawberries, as long as they're not pr sprayed with pesticides. And the healthiest food is spinach. People argue, is it spinach or is it kale? But anyway, I made a grocery list of all of these super healthy foods so that when you go to the grocery, you buy your walnuts, you buy your spinach, you buy your strawberries, you buy your berries, your raspberries, your blueberries, and you buy your sweet potatoes, you buy your purple potatoes. And so when you come home, you've bought all these healthy foods, and that can be the basis of your diet. So if you're wanting to start out, come up with a grocery list again of foods, plant foods that is available to you that you like and you would enjoy. And when you go grocery shopping, check off the list and you bring them home. So they're there. It's like
Very good idea.
Yeah, I opened the refrigerator. There's my blueberries. Okay, well, am I going to have my blueberries with my oatmeal for breakfast or my yogurt for my breakfast? Or am I going to have blueberries with almonds for a snack? So, any other practical suggestions that you have for people who are wanting to improve their diet?
Well, I think what you suggested is really very, very good idea. And I certainly endorse that. I think shopping with a list is good because you focus on what you really want. There are a lot of temptations in the supermarket, and a lot of the choices that people make in the supermarket are often not good for them. And using a list and sticking to it. They also say that when you go to the supermarket, eat before you go. So you're not hungry, and that won't determine, oh, maybe I should pick up these cookies. Maybe I should pick up these chips. But I think what really is important is that we try to move the focus from highly processed food to foods that are more natural, foods that are not tampered with as much. And work with those basic foods. It's the most economical and using a little bit of creativity. And I again suggest using different kinds of spices, reading about them, how to use them, experimenting with them. We could create kind of a new diet for ourselves that is both delicious, economical, and very healthy.
Yes, and when we have family get-togethers in my family, how they know this person's really good at making the pie, and this person's really good at this other thing. In my family, I get asked to make the salad, and to me, a secret to the salad is, of course, fresh ingredients, but also a big variety of ingredients, rather than just having iceberg lettuce and some shredded carrots. Having a big variety of salads. So I'm going to pick a lot of a variety in the lettuces and organic tomatoes, red onions, avocados. I like to include sprouts, like broccoli sprouts are very healthy and anti-cancer. Fresh mushrooms, heirloom carrots. I already mentioned the tomatoes. And even finding a salad dressing that's super healthy, organic, and maybe has some beneficial ingredients in it.
You're making me hungry.
I know exactly. But again, it's the big variety so that when people look at it and they eat it, they're like really, really satisfied.
And I think that's good just for us personally when we're eating by ourselves to make food in a creative way. Many people think, well, I'm not eating with someone else, or I don't have a big family, or I'm not having a party, so I'll eat simply. But you could also put in things that you really enjoy, like the salads. You could make a very creative salad and even eat it by yourself and enjoy it.
Yes, and one of the things that we know, people talk about eating the rainbow. So if you're thinking about your salad, just think about all the different colors of foods that you could include in the salad. So for example, you can get fresh peppers that are all different colors, yellow, orange, and red. And
Absolutely.
by including the different colors, then you're going to include the different phytochemicals.
Exactly.
And with that, let's take a break and listen to another message from one of our commercial sponsors here at UK Health Radio. My name is Catherine Kerrigan, medical intuitive healer, and we're listening to Nathaniel Altman talk, the author of The Genealogy of Plant Foods. We'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
that feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
Their messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nathaniel Altman, you talked earlier in this talk about how many of the foods that we eat on a regular basis came from other continents. So, for example, you talked about tomatoes came originally from South America. Are there any plant foods that are actually native to the United States that originated here?
Yes, there are several, and you mentioned them before. For example, strawberries are indigenous to the United States, as well as other berries like black raspberries, blackberries, blueberries, also cranberries, and also foods like corn. It would be from the southwestern United States, and also some beans and squash. And there are actually many, many kinds of squashes that are, again, very healthy and quite delicious. I usually use squash in making soup as either part of a soup or, and actually soup is a very good way to have a variety of foods. You could freeze it, put it in the freezer and eat it for lunch, which is what I did today. I had a bean soup that I made a few days ago. So those foods are indigenous to the United States. Many people think that apples are indigenous, but they're not. They're originally from Uzbekistan, but many of them have been developed here in New York State at the Cornell University. They have a part of their agriculture department is focused completely on apples. So like Fuji apples were invented right here in New York State.
Who knew?
And peaches in Georgia.
Now, where does chocolate come from? One of my favorite foods.
Well, one of my favorite foods too. Chocolate is from the cacao bean, which is originally from Mexico. And it was used by the Olmecs maybe 15,000 years ago. And later it became used by the Aztecs and the Maya. And it was basically used as a sacred bitter drink that they used in marriage ceremonies, birth ceremonies, and death ceremonies. And eventually it was brought by the conquistadores to Europe, where they finally made it into like chocolate bars. And added sugar to make it into a drink, which we know is hot chocolate. So it eventually went to, and it went, of course, to the United States as well in the mid, maybe 17, 1800s, but became really developed by many of the Swiss chocolatiers in Switzerland. And they developed into really fantastic chocolate. I think the best chocolate is from Switzerland or Belgium, Italy. But all chocolate, I think, is good.
I don't have any problem with chocolate from anywhere.
That's good. I feel the same way.
Chocolate is my friend. Now, where did coffee originate?
Well, coffee, people think it originated in Colombia or Brazil, but it actually originated in Ethiopia. Kind of by accident, a farmer saw his goats eating beans from a tree, and they had a lot more energy. So that's kind of how it was discovered back in like 700 AD. And it was brought into Yemen and later was brought into Turkey, spread throughout Europe. Although it was interesting, one of the popes, Pope Clement, who lived in the 16th century, prohibited the use of it by Catholics. And someone said, "Why don't you just try it, Your Grace, and see how you like it?" And he tasted it. He said, "This is delicious. We shouldn't only keep it for, it shouldn't be only used by the heathen." So he permitted coffee to be used in Italy, where he was based. And that's kind of the growth of the coffee shops in Italy, and then later spread throughout Europe. And of course, the United States. Most of the coffee that's grown now is from Brazil and Vietnam. But I personally, I lived in Colombia for many years, actually several years, not many years, but I grew to love Colombian coffee. So that's pretty much my favorite. But I kind of look at coffee like you do chocolate. I like all of it.
Like all of it. Now, since we're talking about coffee, tell us about tea. Where does tea come from? And
Teas are,
which tea is the best for our health?
well, tea originated in China, which is probably no surprise. It's grown extensively in India, Sri Lanka, and of course, China's the major producer. And it has a lot of antioxidants. All of the tea, all the tea is the same, but it's processed differently. What's called green tea is now considered the best. Has a lot of antioxidants, good for controlling blood pressure, also blood sugar, has anti-cancer properties. People use it to lose weight. So green tea would be a very good addition to one's diet, I think.
Now, many people condemn potatoes, but there are some potatoes that are actually really beneficial for us. What are the best potatoes to eat?
Well, I happen to love potatoes, and it's part of my, my family. It was a Russian Jewish family, so potatoes always played a big role in our diet. And potatoes are not always bad for you, but white potatoes tend to have a lot more, a higher glycemic index, which could promote diabetes. I think the best potatoes to eat, and I've grown to really love them, are potatoes of color. And these would be sweet potatoes. They could also, yams are not the same as potatoes, but they have very similar properties. And this would be yams or sweet potatoes that are orange, yellow, and of course, you mentioned earlier, purple. These have more antioxidants. They have a lower glycemic index, which is better for managing blood sugar. And I've been using only those. I've been avoiding white potatoes as much as I can.
Now, as you know, Nathaniel Altman, many of us want to save money on our grocery bill, but still eat healthy. What foods provide the best nutrition for our investment?
I think that beans are really overlooked as an important basic food. And we mentioned earlier that eating beans regularly can add 4 years to your life. I think pound for pound, they have more nutrition than almost anything else. Also, foods like buckwheat, foods like barley, oats have gone up in price a great deal, but they're also a highly nutritious and very healthy food. It could be used, of course, as cold cereal, hot cereal. It could be made into granola. Those are very important. Also, anything in season, I think, are usually cheaper than foods that are imported or out of season. And it's important to watch the sales because sometimes you could really get very good food at very low prices. Again, that's something a shopping list might help. Do a little research, see what coupons are available, what's on sale, and maybe jump at those. Here in Brooklyn, it's very easy to buy. We have a green grocer. One day they might have a load of asparagus for $1 a pound, or tomatoes for $1 a pound in a the little mini tomatoes that I really like. And just buy what's on sale as well. But I think the foods that are the cheapest would be the beans and the whole grains. And also, sometimes leafy vegetables are reasonably priced as well. But food prices are going up across the board, whether you are a vegetarian or Certainly, if you eat meat, they're a lot more expensive.
Now, what are the healing properties of chili peppers? Because some people like hot food, other people are too sensitive. But what are the healing properties of chili peppers?
Well, chili peppers have been found to be very good for controlling blood pressure. They're also very good for the heart. They're good for managing blood sugar. And also, they have a lot of anti-cancer properties. What's important to know with chili peppers is some of them are not terribly hot. And certainly, like jalapeno peppers, are not as hot as other kinds of peppers. So, there's actually, if you go online and do a little bit of research about the heat in chili peppers, there are many that are like ancho peppers are not terribly spicy, but they have the antioxidants that are good for us. Some peppers are far beyond what we should be eating. Certainly, most of us would have trouble with them, but there are quite a few that are not too hot and that are very good.
So, final question, Nathaniel Altman. You've written an entire book about the genealogy of plant foods. What do you really want people to understand about the genealogy of plant foods?
Well, I think that if we learn to appreciate the background of something, or like when we learn about a relative or a person, we learn about their background and we appreciate them more. Here in the United States, we throw out about 40% of all the food that we buy, which I think is a terrible waste. I don't think we take we tend to take food for granted. And I think the more we get to know foods and about their history, we simply appreciate them more. And that, of course, goes for enjoying them more when we eat them. We're grateful for them. We have a certain type of reverence toward the food that we eat. And many indigenous cultures, they have prayers are said over food before they're eaten, even before they're picked. So I think the idea is I want people to appreciate foods more and to utilize them more to keep us healthy and happy and whole. And I think very simple. And I think that's what we could focus on.
Great information. You've been listening to the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio. My name is Catherine Kerrigan, medical intuitive healer, Amazon number one best-selling author. You can find out more about me and my work at katherinekerrigan.com and unlimitedenergynow.com. While you're there, definitely sign up for my newsletter, which is now available on Substack. Our guest today, Nathaniel Altman, author of many, many books, Diet, Healing, Metaphysics, and Relationships. And today we've talked about the genealogy of plant foods. You can find out more about Nathaniel Altman and his wonderful work at nathanielaltman.com. And remember that eating a wide variety of plant foods is a foundational principle in natural healing. And when you include the healing power of foods in your diet, you can heal yourself naturally. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Natural Healing Show. Keep it natural with the Natural Healing Show.